Hi, welcome to the Travel Advice Show. You can listen to all our shows at traveladviceshow.com, and you can email us at show@traveladviceshow.com. I'm Chris Newton, one of the co-hosts, and thank you for listening to all our shows and subscribing to our shows. We really appreciate all the listenership and all the questions that you have. And I'd like to introduce my other co-host, Jerry Fuller. How are you doing, Jerry?
Very good. It's a great day, and how are you doing, Chris?
Doing great. Would you like to introduce our guest today and the topic today, Jerry?
I'd love to. We're very fortunate to have with us Terry Sims, a world-renowned longboard surfer and instructor, and very fascinating life and truly a wonderful career and a hobby. Welcome, Terry. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fantastic. Really good. How are you guys doing?
Excellent.
Well, it's good. It's good to have you on the show, Terry. Yeah.
Glad to be here.
To begin with, I'd like to ask a question. How did you begin getting interested in surfing? What age did you start? And where were you living when you did?
Well, I first started surfing when, I was probably like 4 years old, and my older brother, Sandy, and his group of friends, he's probably 10 years older than me, they were already into surfing, and his idea of babysitting was piling us in the back of a little VW, taking us down to the beach and setting us on the sand and watching us while they surfed. And then they would come in after surfing for hours, and there we would be, me and my brother, playing in the sand and goofing around and, playing with the sand crabs and throwing mud at each other and all that stuff. And then they put us on the boards and shove us into little white waters. And that was, I was probably 4 years old. And that was in San Diego, California.
Oh, nice. Well, that's a early beginning and very good beginning. Yeah. From that point, how did you get really interested in the longboard surfing? And can you describe what exactly that is?
Longboard surfing is a style of surfing that really came of age and popularity in the 50s and 60s. And then, as most people know, all the Gidget Hollywood surf movies spawned it all also. That really, shot it out to the masses. So longboard surfing is basically a traditional style of riding a board that's normally 9 foot and bigger. So the style is much akin to more of a Telmark skiing style. It's very beautiful. It's very aesthetic. It's very calm. And I've been interested in it my whole life. I mean, ever since the first thing I ever rode was one of those longboards from the 60s. And so I had a real passion for them, even from the word go, because it's a much more, like I said, aesthetic type of surfing rather than what you see now in contemporary surfing is more of a acrobatic type of surfing. So me, I use all the surfboards. I try all the different genres of style. You could really kind of parallel it with a martial art, many, many forms. And the longboard form I found for myself and my body style, I'm tall and skinny, and for my height and my look, they just seem to fit my ability and my style and, how I like to kind of carry myself. So, that's really what I like about the longboarding. And so I've been doing it all my life off and on. But again, like I said, I've ridden all the boards.
Yeah. Hey, Terry, where have you, where are some of your favorite spots that you like to surf, around the world? Do you have any, places that are really, pretty cream of the crop kind of place there?
Well, as of the last 10 years, I've been fortunate enough to be running this travel company, surf coaching, travel destination. I also do some travel agent type of stuff. So I've been really fortunate that way, which has given me exposure to the whole world. And to answer your question, I would have to say probably the single best place I really get excited about going is there's three of them. One is in South Africa. It's called Jeffrey's Bay. It's very close to the wave called Cape St. Francis that the original 60s movie The Endless Summer was the first ones to really film there. That is one of my favorites. It's the It's the wave, it's the culture, it's the food, it's the smell. Africa's just a very exotic place if you've never been there and you're from America and not used to seeing giraffes and lions and tigers and bears and all that stuff like roaming around. So for me, that place holds a ton of interest and a lot of education along with the great wave rides. Also, there's a place in Bali called Nihiwatu. It's a small island off of Bali called Sumba. And there, I love that wave too. But that place is special in another regard, that it has a very social, responsible, eco-green movement where the development of this coastline was done responsibly. So the man, Claude Graves, who discovered it, founded it, created it, he also spun off, non-profit organizations that have created funding for dental, medical, school, supplies. He also integrates local people to work there. He also uses biofuels, and everything is very self-sustained. Everything there is from the area. So futuristically and culturally, I'd have to say Sumba is really right up there with the top two or three. And then, of course, I always adore and love, you know, once you get past a certain amount of years doing an endeavor like, you know, this is a life-altering endeavor, surfing, you know, it really changes your path. And once that path has changed and you're on this direction, you start to realize after years that it's not where you are, it's who you're with.
Oh,
you know, so my favorite break has to be where I grew up with all my friends on a great day. That is like, you know, I come away from that with a ton of memories you know, nothing but just a straight up fantastic experience, you know, that I highly recommend people hang out with their friends and family as much as possible.
Oh, yeah. I think that's important. Whatever activity you do, if you're with the right people, that makes a huge difference. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I've been on perfect locations without the right people, and it was still wonderful, but there was definitely a little bit something missing there, you know, that when you do have that camaraderie and that connection with other people, it's really, you know, that's the human experience right there.
Oh, yeah.
Let me ask this question on the types of waves that surfers do. Let's start this way. For beginners, maybe some of our listeners have not done it or going to. Is there such a thing as a wave height or a type of wave that they should not exceed if they're beginning? Because I'm a whitewater kayaker, and for example, beginners probably should not do more than a Cat 1. Maybe a Cat 2 if there's a pool at the end in the river for whitewater rafting, kayaking. How about the waves? What do you recommend for beginners?
There's several scenarios, you know. If a client was to call me up and say, okay, I've never surfed before. I just got back from a trip with a family, and they, you know, never surfed before. We had a father who was 50. We had a mom who was 40. We had a daughter who was 7 and a son who was 9. So if they were to go by themselves, I would certainly recommend a place with no rocks. I would certainly recommend a place with no pounding shore break, which is the waves that break on the sand, right? That's where 90% of the accidents happen. So really what you're looking for in the very beginning, if you're by yourself, is you're looking for a sand bottom, no rocks, as few people as you can find, lifeguards hopefully posted in the area close to you, and obviously not big pounding surf. You obviously want something small, something waist high to chest high. Any bigger than that, and the force of the waves is so strong that they can really cause a lot of havoc and calamity happens, and it's not such a good experience. So really, the art of learning how to surf is picking and choosing your battles, because it's a battle in the beginning, right? It's just like snowboarding or skiing or anything else, you know, whitewater rafting, kayaking. You don't want to start off in the double black diamond. You want to go the little bunny slope. So when people go by themselves, I suggest that they really research it, find the correct beach, get to the correct beach on the right day, get to the correct beach at the right time of day, and then also have the correct equipment. If you can do those things, then you'll end up with a really fantastic experience. And then if they go with me, well, that's a whole other story. That's like, that's completely different because I'm a private guide and I've done this all my life. So what I do personally in my business is we take people on extreme vacations without extreme risk. So I can actually, like this group I just told you about, I took them to a place where it was nothing but rocks and reef.
Really?
And the waves were big. But because I have complete control of the situation and I've got the experience I do, I'm able to do this very safely, very educationally. I don't even know if that's a word, actually, but with a lot of education in there. You know, I'm a lifeguard, a Coast Guard, you know, 4 years. So I'm well-versed in the aquatic thing. So I'm able to put people in places that would take them 10 years to get to if they were even had the wherewithal or the tenacity to make it that far.
Mm-hmm.
So I just expedite everything and keep a close eye on it. So, you know, if you're going with someone like me, then you can pretty much the world's your oyster, barring going out to the 25-foot Oahu's North Shore.
Right. Let me ask this. I've noted as I've traveled, like in parts of Chile, for example, and like Mexico and El Salvador and several places, that they have surfing championships and areas that appear to me to be extremely dangerous. I mean, just massive waves coming right to cliffs. And you mentioned that don't do it when you begin, but at what stage do you think that is safe to even try?
Choosing a location and the right day and everything, if I got your question right, I couldn't hear you super well. You know what, you'd actually have to repeat the actual question because I could just barely hear you on that one. It was very muffled.
Oh, okay. We'll edit that out. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I've noticed as I've traveled around the world, some places like El Salvador and parts of South America and other places, they have huge waves and coming into like cliffs. But yet they have surfing championships there and lots of surfers will come out and do it. And I get down the cliff and see these people surfing and I am terrified for them. And at what stage do you think it's safe for somebody, even as they're learning, would they even consider something? Because you said it's good to have the sandy beach, but if there's tricky a cliff out there, what do you do?
Well, first of all, I hope that you're smart enough not to put yourself in that situation. As a participant, as a spectator, you know, you can watch whatever you want and be just fairly safe. But I mean, you know, the risk that people take is all, that's a self-appraisal of your ability. And lots of us make mistakes. And most people in life learn from their mistakes. And the ocean is a very unforgiving place when it wants to be. So, you know, when people approach the beach, and especially a place like El Salvador or some of these places in Hawaii or Tahiti, you have to approach them with extreme caution, you know, whether you're spectating or riding, and you have to be very realistic with your abilities and what shape you're in. One of the things I teach and I recommend to people highly is that when you go to the ocean, whether it be a foreign land or wherever, that they really take the time to assess the situation before they ever get near the water. Assess the rocks, assess the size of the surf. You know, surf doesn't come in 25 feet every single day. You know, the ocean, I lived in Hawaii for a few years, and, you know, the North Shore of Hawaii, people think, oh, it's gigantic all the time. Well, this is not so. There's several days where it's totally flat. Then there's days where it's chest high, and there's days where it's head high, and then there's a lot of days where it's really big. So, you know, to keep away from any kind of danger or getting yourself in a situation you don't like, you have to really be, you really have to pay attention to what is going on out in the water. And you have to look at it for quite a while because it's not, you know, it's not terribly consistent. There can be long gaps in between the giant waves. Thus, the whole tourist promotional campaign they have in Hawaii now is there's signs all over Hawaii that say never turn your back on the ocean because, you know, you could walk down there and it could be totally beautiful and you lay down your towel and your camera and your radio and your cell phone and everything else and 15 minutes later, a 30-foot wave comes in and washes you out to sea along with all your stuff.
Right.
So, you know, these types of scenarios, yeah, you know, it's just like me the first time I went up on the mountain, man, that first gondola ride, I was freaking out, you know. So it's the fear of the unknown is always your worst enemy. So instead of being unknown, sit and watch and wait and, you know, assess the situation before you ever get anywhere near it.
Let me ask the last question I can think of is, when you're selecting a board, what are some of the techniques? Is there a certain height, weight, width, or anything like that that you really need to be considering?
When you're preparing your first board, it is really important that you are extremely honest with yourself. There is no set number. You know, a guy 150 pounds does not automatically jump on a 6-foot board. You know, there's too many variables involved. These are not skis. You are not being pulled up by a chairlift. You have to consider your strength in your upper body for paddling. You have to consider your not coordination and really not balance, but what kind of equilibrium you have, because surfing does not discriminate from physicality. It does not say that, okay, a guy who's 5'8" and weighs 200 pounds can't surf, or a guy who's, you know, 6'4" and 130 pounds can't surf. Everybody can surf. There is no body style. So as far as finding the right recipe for your board size, which is, I do believe, the question you're asking, you should confer with an expert and be extremely honest in questions like, how often do you go surfing? How often do you want to go surfing? Where are you going to go surfing? And what are your goals in surfing? That is a huge, huge to-do, you know. If you're going to move to the beach and you're going to surf 5 days a week and it's a wonderful, beautiful sand bottom breakout in front of you and you weigh 150 pounds and you're 5'10", then I would probably recommend a 9-foot board.
Mm-hmm.
Thus, if you're 350 pounds and you're only going to go out one weekend a month, then I would suggest a 12-foot board. And then if a kid says, well, I'm 90 pounds, I'm in high school, I live on the beach, and I want to start surfing, well, I would obviously recommend him something, you know, quite a bit smaller, maybe 7 foot. So.
Mm-hmm. So it's a real science.
Pardon me?
So it's a real science in choosing the right board?
I could say
that. It's a real science, yeah. It's a real, a lot of variables involved and everything there, yeah.
It's a ton of science. Well, you know, really what it is, it's just trial and error.
Yeah.
The truth.
Yeah.
It's much better. It's much better. Here's the real advice. It's much better to err on the side of a board that's too big. Mm-hmm. Because you have to allow for the lack of muscles you have for paddling. You know, I'm taking out pro class swimmers that couldn't paddle anything because it's just different. The technique is different. Everything's different about it. So, and there's no other sport or activity in the world, kayaking being one of them too. Kayakers don't automatically jump on surfboards and paddle really well because you're in a prone position with your head up and you're really balanced on your fulcrum, which is your chi, which is your stomach. So it's a lot of abs and stomach work along with neck work, along with the reach and a smooth and a technique and don't waste energy. So it's a science that you can't nail down. It's kind of a chaos of types, you know what I mean? There is a mathematical formula there, but at the same time, it's not always the same answer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great. Well, give a case, but it's much better to err on the side of being too big, you know, because that's going to eliminate
a lot of
extra movement and extra, you know, excess too much energy. Yes,
uh-huh.
There we go. Because you want to conserve as much as possible because you want to save it for the act of getting up and standing.
Right.
So anyway, that's my theory. When I start people off, I start them off on grossly oversized boards, and then we work down from there.
Okay.
Well, Terry, I know that you are a professional instructor on surfing. Can you tell everybody how they can contact you and about what kind of lead time you require?
You can contact me at simbasurf@yahoo.com. That's my email. You can also call me on my cell phone, 831-421-1766. And if you really want to, you can check out my website, which is Terry Sims Surf, one word, TerrySimsSurf.com. Now, the site is in construction, but hopefully soon it will be fully operational, but it is up, and it will give you a great idea of where I go and what I do.
Excellent.
Fabulous.
Good.
And about how much lead time, say I'd like to hire you to teach me to surf. How much
well,
time
clearly,
lead time
I'm like any other, I'm like any other travel agent. You know, I'm all booked up usually a year in advance for the big holidays. If you're a new person and you can't make, you know, so holidays, it's really hard. You have to book a year out. If you can do other than holidays in between times, then not much lead time, a couple weeks.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, Terry, we thank you very, very much. This has been most informative, and I know our listeners will be very excited to utilize your information and hopefully will call you to get some excellent instruction.
Yeah. Thanks, Terry. I learned a lot about surfing. Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, I think our listeners will be really, you know, they'll either, you know, get going on surfing more or, you know, go to different locations around the world. Yeah. So.
Well, I'll tell you, it's one of the most heartwarming activities there are out there. It's fantastic for families. You know, it's a group activity you can do together, but when you're riding a wave, you're by yourself and, It's a very bonding thing when you're out in the water with your family and the seals swim by and a dolphin pops up and an otter comes next to you. You know, it's something I highly recommend for everybody. I my little line is, you know, I think everybody can surf. And I think everybody is a surfer. Some people just haven't done it yet.
Right. Yeah.
That's excellent.
Great. All right.
Well, thanks again. We appreciate you being with us.
Yeah.
Okay, no problem. Thank you guys very much.
Okay, yeah, have a great day. Okay.
Okay, you too.
Right.